you've been working on for many years, was originally a story by Ray Bradbury. And we aired it last Friday. I believe it was last Friday during Selected Shorts. So some of our listeners might have gotten to hear that production, that radio drama. And if they were really lucky, they also got to see it last spring for Festival International. Your play was produced during the festival.
Yeah.
So tell us how you initially got interested in this storyline by Ray Bradbury.
Well, I'm a big fan of radio drama. I am one of the few people I know who is. And I'm one of
And it used to be so common, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And in some countries, it's never gone away. You know, the BBC still, in England, obviously, is putting out, you know, multiple radio dramas every day. And on people's lunch breaks, they just tune in to, like, their soap opera that they listen to every day on the radio. But here in America, that we didn't carry that on. We jumped wholeheartedly both feet right into television and stayed there.
That's where we told our stories, wasn't
yeah.
it? And
mm-hmm.
that's where the soap operas went to. And I do want to mention to people that as they're listening to you talk about Kaleidoscope, we are going to be airing it just after our interview. And so people get an opportunity if they didn't get to hear it or they'd like to hear it a second time, we'll be airing it. So radio drama, your interest in it, why do you feel it's a great way to tell a story?
Well, it's an easier way to tell a story for me. Mm-hmm. And so as a theater director, if I want to put a play in space, there's all sorts of set considerations, costume considerations, lighting considerations. What does space look like, feel like, sound like? How are the actors going to, you know, are we going to hang them from the ceiling and let them float? Are they going to walk like they're in space? How does gravity affect them physically? Lots of questions with complicated, possibly expensive answers. Whereas on the radio, we simply put a hand over our mouths and say, "So this is space." And that's it. We're
in space. You get a theremin sound, too.
And suddenly, that's all we need.
Yes.
And so I find freedom in the storytelling. Anything can happen. You know, any size monster, any size set, as beautiful as we want to make it. Maybe some echoey footsteps mm-hmm. and somebody says, mm-hmm. my God, this temple is beautiful. And that's mm-hmm. all we need.
Well, and really with any good writing, it's a great medium because you focus on the words and the interaction mm-hmm. of the people.
It does require a writer who understands radio, mm-hmm. which is, again, why I got interested in Kaleidoscope. I was listening to some old-time radio drama because that's when writers existed who still knew how to write for it here in America. And I heard this story, and it was by Ray Bradbury, who I've been a fan of for a long time. And I was struck at the universal themes presented within it. You know, the main character deals with some of the biggest issues. How do you judge whether or not your life was well lived? What does that measuring stick look like? Ultimate aloneness. He's born alone. He dies alone. Every relationship he has is transitory. How is he going to come to grips with this, with his impending doom? So these giant issues obviously attracted me as a storyteller, and I began to look into it, and I discovered that Ray Bradbury has written this story in a variety of ways in a number of different mediums. He originally wrote it as a short story, then he wrote it as a play, then he wrote it three different ways for different radio producing companies. And so as I began to consume this story in more and more formats, I became a little obsessed with it and stitched together my favorite parts from all of the different versions and came up with Kaleidoscope.
And that was the original name. That's the Ray
mm-hmm.
Bradbury
name.
Yeah,
every single story has been called Kaleidoscope.
Well, he was obviously obsessed with it too, the fact that he made it into so many formats.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's on a very basic level, it, like I said, it deals with the biggest of all issues, mankind and his demise, and how does he deal with that? And it deals with it in a very economical, short way, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. It always was a short story. It always fit within a half hour. And it was always, for those of you who are about to hear it, packing a really emotional punch.
And there's also the element, I mean, obviously the themes you bring up, does our life have meaning? You know, what is the meaning of our relationships? I mean, people deal with those subjects all the time. And of course, great literature has always dealt with it. There's something about the setting of this play and where those questions get observed that is so startling and mm-hmm. I guess frightening to us.
I think it's because it's about man alone with himself.
Completely.
Because he's in space. He can't see anyone else. He can only hear them for most of the play.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to deal with the questions. There's no escaping it. The character, the main character, thinks a lot about how he's always been obsessed with his career and put that before everything else. And now that the career is gone, what is he left with? And quite literally in the story, which makes for good symbolism, he is left with nothing except his life experiences and his memories. And he is not happy. He finally discovers, once he slows down to take a look at his life, he's not happy with the choices he's made.
And I guess in other situations, stories where that topic is addressed, meaning there are always other distractions to distract us from the contemplation of that.
Sure. There's the next career move,
career.
I relate with that, the character being obsessed with his career, because he thought that was going to make a happy life for himself. And now that his life is over, he wished he'd spent time doing anything else.
Except what he did
mm-hmm.
when this happened.
Yeah.
Well, sketch just for those people who are not familiar with Kaleidoscope, don't really know Ray Bradbury, what is the basic story?
The basic story is that a man, it's set in the future, it's science fiction, but like all good science fiction, it is about the here and now and mm-hmm. the universal themes. And so man in space, working on a spaceship explodes, and all of the crew are dead except 6 people. And they can't see one another because in space they've all been thrown in different directions and they can't control which direction they're going to go in. But they can talk for about an hour on their radio headsets. And so the story is literally their last bit of communication as they all float away from one another and out of radio contact.
And they're all talking about these issues.
Sure. What would you talk about? They're all very aware they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting about the story is that they all deal with it in different ways. And each one of them sort of takes on a different part of a human psyche. One of them becomes very aggressive and mean and tries to hurt other people. One of them decides to find it all very humorous and roll with it. One of them just screams and cries and tries to deny the reality. Another one becomes very pragmatic and up until the end never stops trying to look for a way out. And there is terror, but there is also real beauty right in the middle of the story, beauty of acceptance, that you can find a glory in dying well.
Mm-hmm. So really the full range of emotions when facing that loneliness and those final questions of life.
Yeah,
and
it's a very, very weighty story.
Very weighty story, but yet somehow light in this medium. As you mentioned, there are actually 2 different art forms. The play that you created last spring that was during Festival International that people could actually see
mm-hmm.
on stage, and then the radio drama, which our listeners will have an opportunity to hear in just a little while. How did you approach the 2 different? I mean, obviously you said that it's a very freeing thing to do the radio drama, but in order to actually put it on stage, what did you do?
Well, to put it on stage, we knew that we had 2 landscapes to tell, or to describe to an audience. The first landscape was space itself. And for that, we went with a giant screen that you can project on, projection screen. And we projected a simple star field, some stars, some blackness. That was it. But then the other landscape, which is much more evocative, is the one inside the main character's mind. He goes on these long monologues where he begins to think about his past and the choices he's made. And so that got represented through really vibrant and originally created video projections of various colors and images that filled the screen behind him while he spoke until another character broke him out of his reverie and he was brought back into reality. And then all those images just disappeared and we were back in the cold bleakness of space. Mm-hmm. So there was one landscape which was desolate and another which was filled with life and color and motion. And they were constantly being juxtaposed next to one another.
Hmm.
But I also left the audience in the dark for a lot of it. It was a very dimly lit play. And in the opening, I turned off all the lights and there was literally nothing for anyone to look at. And you listened to it as a radio drama when you were in the audience for 5 minutes until the ship explodes. And that's when we first meet the men, because in my mind, that was when they first actually start living. And they become real is when they stop
completely who they are.
Yeah, and they discover who these men really are.
Well, maybe someday we'll all get to see that stage production again. But the radio drama, you have a special affection for, as you said earlier. You love radio drama. It gives a freedom to what you do. And really, what you're describing that you did on stage, I felt like when I listened to it last Friday, I was creating that set in my own head, which is what we really do during a radio drama. We're all creating those images.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of radio drama, is that the special effects are always perfect. Because they're being created per person. It's wonderful. It's also what's also interesting to about the live version versus the radio version is that they are both completely accurate and whole and create original pieces of art. So it's not like the radio drama is simply a recording of the live version. Wish you could have seen the live version.
Right.
It stands on its own as its own piece of art, and it has advantages over the live version. So. In this way, no true version of Kaleidoscope exists. There's no wrong way to interact with the story. So in the stage version, you get to have a very powerful experience, which is watching people break down, weep, and deal with these emotions right in front of you. That is obviously very powerful, particularly when it's happening live. In the radio version, there's this self-reflexive thing going on where the story is about people interacting via the radio. And since you are interacting with the story via the radio, you become a participant in the story in a wholly original way that all the audience members at the live production didn't get to do.
I want to tell people, just before we continue talking about it, if you're just tuning in, my guest is Nathan Gabriel, who is assistant professor of theater here at UL Lafayette, talking about his creation of Ray Bradbury's Kaleidoscope, both as a stage play that some people saw last spring and a radio drama, which was done here at KRVS in our studios. We aired it during Selected Shorts last week, but we are airing it in just a few minutes. You'll get to hear it here on KRVS. I mentioned to you earlier that I got a chance to hear it last Friday, and it was very powerful. It got more powerful as I listened. It was fascinating in the beginning, but became more gripping as the story continued. And you felt that that was very much a part of, I guess, intrinsic to radio drama and in particular this story.
Yeah, absolutely. So the beginning of the play, characters are on a ship, and it is traditional radio drama in that you are eavesdropping on what would be a naturalistic conversation. And then the ship explodes and it becomes very meta radio drama in that the audience is experiencing what the characters are experiencing, only hearing voices and seeing nothing, seeing a landscape and only interacting with people via audio. And so as I mentioned, the listener, once the ship explodes, becomes a part of the radio drama in that way and becomes really drawn in because all of a sudden they are participating instead of just eavesdropping.
I mean, that's a great way to describe it, because I felt exactly that way. It was interesting, and the voices were great before the explosion, and then afterwards you are there. You are in that story, in space, in those spacesuits, and as it happens, we don't want to give everything away as to what happens, but as it gets closer and closer to the ending of the drama, you just feel these amazing emotions, you know, both that kind of claustrophobia and yet that beauty that you're talking about.
And we tried to honor that beauty with the underscoring, which took the place of the bright, colorful visual landscapes. Now, in the radio version, whenever the character goes into his monologues that take you inside of his mind, it has underscoring to it, which really accentuates that beauty that we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us who the characters are and who plays them.
Sure. So the main character is a gentleman named Hollis. Hollis is a career-driven astronaut who has spent his whole life trying to get ahead financially, and now, at the end of his life, wonders if maybe that was the wrong way to measure success, which I think is something we can all relate to. Applegate plays a much darker part of the human psyche, one that if he can't be happy, no one will be happy. And Applegate does a lot of things to try to drag everyone else down with him as he realizes his death is coming. Then there's Le Spare. Hollis is played by Vincent Barra, a wonderful actor here in town. He does a lot of work. I'm sure everybody would be pretty familiar with him. Applegate, played by Stephen Cooper, also a pretty prolific actor here. Le Spare is played by Duncan Thistlewaithe, who is really wonderful actor. I was pleased to get to work with him, and he brings a real lighthearted touch to Le Spare. Le Spare is the comedic element in this play. He's an older gentleman who has lived his life, and now he finds the whole situation quite funny. He's able to view the entire situation from a distance. Stone is played by Aaron Chazon, and Stone is the pragmatic one who never really stops dealing with things on an even keel, is always kind of looking out for a rescue ship and never loses his cool. And then there's Stimson, who is the opposite of Stone in that he loses his mind almost immediately and just weeps and falls into despair and depression and is never able to resurrect himself from that. And then there is the captain, played by UL professor Sarah Burke Stimson, played by Chris Matochi, who is a UL student he's a wonderful actor. I just worked with him in Reasons to Be Pretty. Those of you who saw Reasons to Be Pretty, he played Kent. But the captain, played by UL professor Sarah Burke, is an interesting character in that the captain doesn't really represent part of the human psyche. The captain represents people's regret at the decisions they'd made. It's implied that perhaps the captain drinks and perhaps the captain had not been the best captain they could be, and maybe they wouldn't be in this situation if the captain had been a little bit better at her job. And I cast it as a woman because Applegate has a real problem with the captain. I thought it would be interesting to also get to make Applegate kind of a sexist. But Ray Bradbury has a take on the captain as well. One of his versions of Kaleidoscope focuses only on the captain. And when the ship explodes, we follow the captain in his mind. And the captain is trying to impress his wife back on Earth by making this run faster than everyone else could ever make it. Mm-hmm. And so he tries to push them through a meteor storm, dangerously so, and that's why the ship explodes. And so the captain, it's lightly touched on in this version, is filled with hubris. The captain has pride that gets in the way of her good judgment, and everyone suffers the consequences for it.
Mm. Well, again, as you said, not necessarily the human condition, but those outside things that suddenly create the situations that bring us in touch with ourselves.
And I think Bradbury recognizes that while that might be interesting for a moment, the truly interesting thing is exploring all the different parts of the human mind. And so the captain disappears pretty quickly into the story.
Mm. Okay. So you're listening to Nathan Gabriel talk about his play, both stage play and radio drama of Kaleidoscope, originally written in many forms by Ray Bradbury. Nathan created this as a radio drama. He loves radio drama. And it was recorded here in our studios here at KRVS. And we're going to be listening to it in just a moment. Have you been creating any other radio dramas?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I have worked on quite a few radio dramas. I'm happy to say. I did War of the Worlds. That was was really interested because when you talk about War of the Worlds, everybody knows the part where there is, it's a phony radio show and aliens have come down. But there's this whole other half of War of the Worlds that's really interesting that no one really knows about, where the main character has to live for a while in the world filled with aliens. And everybody tends to forget about that part of the story because it's not as sensationalized. But it has its own real interesting beauty to it, where the character begins to see the world in a new way now that there's no other people on it. Also a depressing radio drama, it brings me back to something I want to talk about with Kaleidoscope, speaking of depressing radio dramas. Ray Bradbury, in my research, I discovered that he talked about how he felt he wasn't getting the critical respect he deserved because he was an optimist, whereas a science fiction writer like Kurt Vonnegut, who seems to leave the world, the genre of science fiction, and become literature that we might study on an academic level. He felt that the only difference between him and Vonnegut was that Vonnegut was a pessimist and Bradbury was an optimist. And I thought it would be interesting to note for your listeners that the story that you're about to hear, Bradbury originally ends much more optimistically than I do. I tend to agree with him that his stories would be better received if they were less optimistic at the end. But normally at the end of this story, it's bleak, and then there is always a real glimmer of saccharine hope and a look at the world and about how beautiful even this most horrible thing is, with like little boys looking up at the sky and seeing something beautiful and making a wish on it, or a little kid pointing to a color in the sky and telling his mom about it and then making a wish on it. And I was always very confused as to why Bradbury had that on there. And I just went ahead and lobbed it off. And so if you do find it bleak, go explore it in its original form and you'll find a happier ending.
All right. Well, maybe we can expect a whole series of Ray Bradbury redone by Nathan Gabriel.
I would love it.
Well, we look forward to more of your radio dramas, perhaps here on KRVS.
Sounds great.
If you are tuning in, what we're going to be hearing coming up now is Nathan Gabriel's radio drama created from Ray Bradbury's Kaleidoscope, which was produced in many forms. But this is his radio drama, Nathan Gabriel's take and production work of art from Ray Bradbury's Kaleidoscope. And we hope you enjoy it. If you have any questions afterwards, Nathan Gabriel is an assistant professor of theater here at UL Lafayette. Very busy. They're working on all kinds of productions over there, a really energetic theater group here at the university. So this is Ray Bradbury's, created by Nathan Gabriel, of Kaleidoscope.